Next up, the audiobook review. This has been supplied by our friends at Calibre Audio. However, due to publishing restrictions, we are unable to use the original audio, so the excerpts are being read by our very own Rob Pearman. However, if you'd like to listen to the original, Calibre are very happy to supply this free of charge. Please ring 01296 432 339 or email enquiries@calibre.org.uk. Dame Agatha Mary Calissa Christie, known as Lady Mallowan, DBE, was born 15th of September 1890 and died 12th of January 1976. She was an English author known for her 66 novels and 14 short story collections, particularly those revolving around fictional detectives Hercule Poirot and Miss Marple. She also wrote the world's longest-running play, the murder mystery The Mousetrap, which has been performed in the West End of London since 1952. A writer during the golden age of detective fiction, Christie was called the Queen of Crime, a nickname now trademarked by her estate, or the Queen of Mystery. She also wrote six novels under the pseudonym Mary Westmacott. In 1971, she was made Dame by Queen Elizabeth II for her contributions to literature. She is the best-selling fiction writer of all time, her novels having sold more than 2 billion copies. So here we are in the studio again. I have Debbie with me.
Hello.
Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you.
And this month we are looking at Agatha Christie's Lord Edgware Dies.
Mm. Or known by some as 13 at Dinner.
Now, I read that somewhere because that wasn't that the American title?
Yes, there are various ones that have been changed for the American audience.
Yeah. And 13 at Dinner been unlucky, I assume. That's
probably, exactly. Yeah. And this is something that comes... It's not a bad title for the book.
No.
And this does come up within it, doesn't it?
So, yeah, it does. Now, I think with this particular audiobook, we have to be very, very careful not to give away the plot, because the whole plot and the whole idea of a murder mystery is you don't know who's
Indeed.
Done it until the end.
Yes.
So we'll be very careful not to, give away too much and talk around the plot rather than specific.
Yeah.
You're an Agatha Christie fan, aren't you?
Yes, I love her. I love her. What I try and do is alternate quite a heavy piece of fiction with an Agatha Christie or something similar. It's my light reading. It's my escapism. I've loved Agatha Christie since I was about 10, and particularly Poirot's, narrated by Hastings. Hugh Fraser, who played Hastings, narrates this. He's done most of them. He's got such a lovely voice. He's a very, very good audiobook reader. So absolute joy to listen to his voice alone.
So Hastings is a conceit in the Poirot books, because I'm not as familiar as you. So
he's the Dr. Watson.
Yes, exactly. So he's telling the tale. I kind of got that feeling from it that that character had appeared before.
Yes, but Christie got a bit bored of him after a while.
Oh, did
so
she?
Then she made him go to the Argentine.
now
he's back
abroad.
From the Argentine in this book. He comes and goes a bit, but it's mainly sort of the first 10, 12 books he's in, and then he just comes back every now and again. And then Poirot is always delighted to see mon ami Hastings. but we always feel in our family that a book with Hastings is generally a better Poirot.
So it's a nice way of telling the story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Telling it from like the companion's point of view, and I quite like that. And you can observe Poirot from a distance then.
Exactly, because he's sometimes a little scathing of Poirot's big-headedness, and I think that's important.
It is. That came across, and of course I know the character because I've watched a lot of Agatha Christie on TV and film, and that did come across that he has a certain arrogance about him, which again in this book it's not missing, is it? It's still there.
Yeah.
And you're reading, am I right in saying you're going through from the beginning of
that? Yes. So my husband and I collect classic, well, we've collected all of them. It was quite difficult because some of them were only published in America for some strange reason, some collections. And we try and get the oldest version we can. So we've got a lot of them in the Green Penguins. And every now and again, we read them through in order. So this is the second time that I've done this. And it does take a number of years.
There's 66 novels. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and some collections of short stories.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, Molly, it's fascinating. It's a really, really good glimpse into society, because it goes from the 20s to the 70s.
Yes.
And the later Poirot novels, you can tell Agatha Christie is really scathing of the modern world and hippies.
They get quite dark.
Now, unfortunately, some of the very late ones, you can tell she's got dementia. There's one called Passenger to Frankfurt, which is a very confusing read. But if we go back to the commentary on society, I think this is really interesting because it begins, you know, in the interwar years, goes through the war, after the war. So that's one of the lovely things about reading them in order.
Well, that's great as a novelist to have that longevity, isn't it? And to be able to write books in the particular area that you're in, as history progresses, the 70s probably were quite difficult for someone who was born in 1876.
And the other thing, which is really interesting with this book, which is to do with, there's a marriage that breaks up in this book, and that's not giving anything away. Christie's first husband was unfaithful. That marriage broke up. It was absolutely awful for her. It was done in a very unpleasant way. And you can recognise this in her novels. Oh. There were a lot of injured wives. You know, it's something that repeats again and again and again. And our main character is Jane Wilkinson, a very beautiful and I think quite good American actress.
Yes.
And she wants a divorce from her husband, Lord Edgware. She's managed to snare this English lord. And the action sort of stems from this marriage breakup, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just pause for an excerpt from the audiobook when Jane Wilkinson summons Poirot to her hotel to ask him to help her find a way to persuade her husband, Lord Edgware, to grant her a divorce.
"And it is difficult," went on Jane Wilkinson. "I should say you weren't the man to shy at difficulties. Let me compliment you on your insight, madame, but all the same, I do not make the investigations for divorce. It is not pretty, ce métier-là. My dear man, I'm not asking you to do spying work. It wouldn't be any good. But I've just got to get rid of the man, and I'm sure you could tell me how to do it." Poirot paused a while before replying. When he did, there was a new note in his voice. First, tell me, madame, why are you so anxious to get rid of Lord Edgware?" There was no delay or hesitation about her answer. It came swift and pat. "Why, of course, I want to get married again. What other reason could there be?" Her great blue eyes opened ingenuously. "But surely a divorce should be easy to obtain. You don't know my husband, Monsieur Poirot. She shivered. "I don't know how to explain it. He's a queer man. He's not like other people." She paused and then went on. "He should never have married anyone. I know what I'm talking about. I just can't describe him, but he's queer. His first wife, you know, ran away from him, left a baby of 3 months behind. He never divorced her, and she died miserably abroad somewhere. Then he married me. Well, I couldn't stick it. I was frightened. I left him and went to the States. I've no grounds for a divorce. And if I've given him grounds for one, he won't take any notice of them. He's a kind of fanatic. In certain American states, you could obtain a divorce, madam. That's no good to me, and not if I'm going to live in England." "You want to live in England?" "Yes." "Who is the man you want to marry?" "That's just it. The Duke of Merton." I drew in my breath sharply. The Duke of Merton had so far been the despair of matchmaking mamas. A young man of monkish tendencies, a violent Anglo-Catholic, he was reported to be completely under the thumb of his mother, the redoubtable Dowager Duchess. His life was austere in the extreme. He collected Chinese porcelain and was reputed to be of aesthetic tastes. He was supposed to care nothing for women. "I'm just crazy about him," said Jane sentimentally. "He's unlike anyone I ever met. And Merton Castle is too wonderful. The whole thing is the most romantic business that ever happened. He's so good-looking, too, like a dreamy kind of monk." She paused. "I'm going to give up the stage when I marry. I just don't seem to care about it anymore."
Had you worked it out really early on?
No.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, not at all. So I was being led astray completely, as one should be in a good murder mystery novel. So I was swaying from one person to another person and thinking, oh, it's her. Oh, no, it's him. It must be him. And then another little droplet of information would come through. So, no, I didn't. And I was quite surprised by the end. And that's always a good thing, I think, in a mystery novel. You want to be surprised.
Yes, or even if you know who it is, you know, it's a process of enjoying the ride, isn't it?
Yes.
But there are lots of twists and turns in this one. Obviously, I did know the plot. So reading it through, I was thinking, yeah, that's fair. Agatha's put that little nugget in there. Mm. So it is fair.
Yeah.
There is an idea within the Christie community that this book isn't fair because Poirot has his mon Dieu moment quite near the end as a result of a comment from a passerby. Again, giving nothing away. And people say, oh, this isn't on. But it is. When you read it through, you see these little hints.
Little nuggets of information, yes, absolutely.
So I disagree with that idea. I think it's quite
okay,
fun.
Well, that's interesting because, yes, you want to, as somebody, if you enjoy this type of novel, and I think lots of people do, it's very, very popular, you want to be able to go back and say, oh, there was that clue, was that clue, and piece it together, rather than, as you say, it all being pulled together at the end and not really making sense to anybody. So that's interesting.
What Christie has in throughout her writing is charm.
Yes.
And remember, she was sort of pretty much the first person to nail this type of murder mystery. Yeah, there was Marjorie Allingham, there was Dorothy L. Sayers, but they have a slightly less accessible way of writing.
Right,
perhaps.
Okay.
Slightly more academic, if you like. And it's a bit like the Beatles, isn't it? Lots of things have come from the Beatles. Lots of things have come from Agatha Christie.
Yes.
But she started this.
She's the original.
Of this type of murder mystery novel. And she's very, very good at it.
Yeah. She's pretty much unrivaled, I would say, in terms of popularity. All her novels have been made into films, haven't they? Almost all, I would have thought so.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I mean, it's a great kind of source for any filmmaker, isn't it? Because you've got everything in it. You've got fantastic characters. You've got a very twisted plot. Sometimes exotic locations. So it's a gift, I would say, to a filmmaker.
Let's talk about some of the characters. Who did you like?
Well, obviously, I did like Captain Hastings. He seems like a good sort.
Oh, yes, a good egg, by Jove, yes.
Absolutely good sort. Obviously, because he's the foil to Traparo, he also seems a little bit behind the action, not quite realising what was going
on.
And you need that kind of slightly comic, slightly bumbling, but also very useful character. Yeah.
The one I really liked was the hat maker, the friend of Carlotta.
Very
jolly.
Very jolly, very practical. Yeah. Yes. Yes, I liked her too. There were lots of likeable characters in here. And I think this is a good point to have an excerpt from the audiobook. Let's hear from Captain Hastings and his insightful observations of Poirot.
I must say that I was very much surprised. I had taken Poirot's words as uttered lightly in a convivial moment, and I had no idea that he'd actually taken steps to carry out his promise. Poirot, who was very quick-witted, read my mind, and his eyes twinkled a little. But yes, mon ami, it was not solely the champagne. I didn't mean that. But yes, you thought to yourself, the poor old one, he has the spirit of the party. He promises things that he will not perform, that he has no intention of performing. But, my friend, the promises of Hercule Poirot are sacred. He drew himself up in a stately manner as he said the last words. Of course, I know that, I said hastily. But I thought that perhaps your judgment was slightly, influenced. I am not in the habit of letting my judgment be influenced, as you call it, Hastings. The best and highest of champagne, and the most golden-haired and seductive of women, nothing influences the judgment of Hercule Poirot. No, mon ami, I am interested, that is all. In Jane Wilkinson's love affair? Not exactly that. Her love affair, as you call it, is a very commonplace business. It is a step in the successful career of a very beautiful woman. If the Duke of Merton had neither a title nor wealth, his romantic likeness to a dreamy monk would no longer interest the lady. No, Hastings, what intrigues me is the psychology of the matter, the interplay of character. I welcome the chance of studying Lord Edgware at close quarters. You do not expect to be successful in your mission. Pourquoi pas? Every man has his weak spot. Do not imagine, Hastings, that because I am studying the case from a psychological standpoint, I shall not try my best to succeed in the commission entrusted to me. I always enjoy exercising my ingenuity. I had feared an allusion to the little grey cells and was thankful to be spared it.
But, you know, what she always gets right is, in her murder mysteries, the people who die are generally really horrible people. That's how it works.
And it serves them right.
It does. It's all right. It is escapism. And that's not generally how things are done now in murder mysteries. You know, it's a bit gritty, someone who didn't deserve to die. But Lord Edgware was not a nice man.
I mean, there's kind of hints of sadomasochist sort of traits.
Yeah. What was that word that was used to describe some of his interests? Not kinky, but it was something like that.
It was hinting along some sort of like dark interests in some... He was quite a nasty character, really. I just wanted to ask you what you think makes a good murder mystery.
Okay, well, the victim being a bounder is obviously very important. Mm. You often have a second and a third murder as well. I think it's good to have one more. Now, this is where it gets a bit harder, because often the second or the third murder victims, they're quite nice, and it's just that they've been in the wrong place at the wrong time and overheard something.
Yeah.
It needs good pacing. It needs, as I said earlier, to be fair, you've got to have those signposts all the way through so that no one feels cheated by the time they get to the end. No reliance on twins, please. That's been done.
That's a cop
too
out.
Much. You need an interesting detective. They don't have to be likable, but they have to be a little more interesting than a bog standard policeman. So it could be a policeman with an alcohol addiction or something. You know, they've got to have flaws.
A quirk,
so yeah. Poirot's quirk, he's quite OCD. He likes things to be arranged in a certain way. He likes his moustaches to be done in a certain way. If these things are not done, he will not progress. You've got to have a good detective. I think if you see an adaptation of a murder mystery, you'll notice that the actors they tend to use are what we would call in the profession character actors.
Yes.
So these characters in the books need to be easily accessible, slightly over-exaggerated, possibly, but not exactly a stereotype. They're a type that has come from somewhere. They are believable, but just slightly exaggerated.
Yeah.
I like that. And an interesting setting. Like you said, some of them in exotic places.
Yes.
Or like, and then there were none. They're on an island.
Yes.
Where there's something generally intriguing.
Yeah, absolutely. So all those elements add to what makes a good novel, a good read.
Yeah, preferably a period piece as well, but not necessarily.
Should we go on to our three reasons for listening to this audio book? Now, I'm a relative newcomer to Agatha Christie, but I really enjoyed it. As you say, it's something that I whizzed through it because I kept wanting to know what was going to happen next. So for that reason, I think that's why lots of people do read murder mysteries. It's really engaging. You have to keep listening and listening and thinking, oh, no, that's not what I thought. And then something else changes. So I liked that. In terms of like a literary event, It's quite plainly written, I would say. But it's very clear. It is descriptive. I did have a really good image in my mind of how people looked and where the locations. That was great too. I think something that, like you say, I would intersect this with maybe something a bit heavier, and then this would be a nice listen on holiday, travelling, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Perfect. And absolutely entertaining. So there are my three reasons.
No, I agree with you. I think it's funny. She's a witty writer.
Yeah.
There's a very funny line. We talked about a hat maker. And Hastings, as narrator, sort of says, I'm just going to halt the narrative for a bit to explain, because I don't know at what period you're reading this, but at the period in which I wrote this, there was a fashion for a hat to go over one eye, generally the left. And I just think it was really funny.
I remember that piece. Yeah. That was quite funny. It was sort of like breaking the fourth wall a little bit.
It was. So, yeah, I think it's funny. Secondly, it's a Hastings one. And any Hastings one is worth reading. Thirdly, it's a well-made Christie. It's a pretty good one. I don't think it's the best one, but it's pretty interesting plot, quite intriguing, and you will be immersed in it for the 6 hours that it takes to listen to it. Yes, absolutely. Not very long. So why not?
Why not indeed? I think if you're already an Agatha Christie fan, you may have listened to this already. But if you haven't, it's definitely worth a try. Debbie, thank you as ever
you're welcome.
For being in the studio. And we'll see you next month.
Yeah, see you.